to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Shoot the Defence on Kisway, brought to you by My Sportswear and the FNX Network. I'm your host, Stel, and sat beside me is Mr. Mike Pieri. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Oh, nice to be back.
How's things?
Good. Not sitting too close now.
Not too close.
Good. Excellent, excellent.
All right, and on the line from all the way from Texas, we have Mr. Mark Meredith, and in Scotland, Giancarlo Rinaldi. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, good.
Mark, you good?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Missing the soccer with it being the winter break, but just trying to keep myself busy.
Absolutely. What's the weather like in Texas at the moment?
It's not as warm as usual, but we've still got a lot of sunshine, depending, you know, with it being late November, so we're keeping our fingers crossed, but I'm sure the cold weather's going to be coming in before long. But when we say cold, obviously it's nowhere near what we experience at home, so it's still new to me to see this weather throughout the year.
Fair enough. And Giancarlo, I'm not even going to ask what the weather's like in Scotland, because if it's anything like in London, then, well, you know.
Are you in a canoe?
it's pretty terrible, as you would imagine. It's pretty terrible.
I went to Glasgow once, Giancarlo, for a poker tournament at a friend's house, and it rained for something like 50 hours, and the rain hurt.
That's just a normal couple of days in Scotland.
Oh, okay.
You get 50 hours rain in 40 hours in Scotland. That's how it works.
Haven't been back since.
You still didn't answer the question, though. Are you in a canoe?
Yeah, as I speak, I'm in a canoe, and I've got my scuba gear ready just in case.
We'll take a picture of it and put it on Twitter, mate. There you go, wonderful. Well, guys, let's talk about the Premier League, where Olivier Giroud came to Arsenal's rescue as his 89th minute equaliser at Old Trafford earned Arsenal a point. Now, one matter gave United the lead with a well-worked goal, and Mourinho's men could have had a penalty when, how shall we say, Monreal tangled with Valencia? You call it a tangle?
Rugby tackle,
yeah. We'll go with that. Mark, I'd have taken a point before the game. I mean, I'm a Man United fan, and I was very disappointed at the end. But, you know, at the end of the day, United should have put the game to bed. And Wenger is no doubt the happier manager. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree with your style. I think, you know, Old Trafford's always a hard place to go for any team, you know, whatever form United are on. And the big games, usually they step up and in front of their own fans. So for Arsenal to go, you know, a goal behind and then rescue it late on in the game just shows that, you know, a little bit of character from them. And you know, they're having a good season, Arsenal, this year, and I think they're improving throughout. So I think at the minute, you know, Arsene Wenger can be very happy with what's going on and hopefully can keep pushing.
Mark, you say Arsenal look really good, but do they look like a title-winning team to you?
No, I'm not convinced still that they can go on and win it. They've been a difficult team for the last couple of seasons where, you know, they can be fantastic to watch and then they can get their disappointing moments as well. So I wouldn't bank on them. They're a little bit like with Liverpool when I say with them, they're the same. So I still think it's going to be Chelsea's title this year, but I think Arsenal could give them a good run for their money, but just probably lose it late on.
Fair enough. Now, Mike, it wasn't a bad result for United. I mean, you look at the Fenerbahce performance away from home. Let's be honest, I mean, the attitude of the players have improved and so have the performances. So what do you make of Mourinho's start to his United career at the moment?
I think you're correct to say that wasn't a bad result and that performance have improved. And I think this is because Mourinho is learning more and more about his players, his squad, and they too are understanding what's required of them. Don't forget, for some of these players, this is their fourth manager in a short period of time. But I think Herrera is a case in point. With this form and performance is epitomising the difference between what the manager he was playing with before, i.e. Van Gaal, who stifled his game, whereas Mourinho's allowing him to play his natural game. And I think that's important. He's got more freedom to play. I think it is becoming apparent that to Mourinho, he's learning his squad, he's finding out which players he can trust, which players he can't trust. And, you know, I think as fans as well, we're quite open to say that this squad is nowhere near competitive and it's not going to challenge for the title. And this is regardless of the money that's spent. To me, that's quite a narrow-minded and false argument, because Mourinho has to be given time to bring the players that he wants. Certainly defensively, it's nowhere near a Mourinho team. It has taken time, and he's still assessing his squad, and it can't be easy. You know, he would have been aware of the players who were at the club when he took the job on. And while it's okay to be aware of players before getting there, only once you're in that position where you're working with these players day in, day out, can you then realise, I know the kind of player I've got now. I know in terms of their ability, but also in terms of, and this is a big thing for Mourinho, their mental attitude and their mental fortitude. And that's what's really key. And it's no surprise that players like Mkhitaryan haven't played, and he's called out a couple of players. And that's just Mourinho being Mourinho. Personally, I'm happy with Mourinho as a fan. I want him to be there. I think he's exactly what we needed. You know, he's not everyone's cup of tea. I get that. And I get that he rubs people up the wrong way. But for United, he's the manager that club needed, especially given the, you know, Van Gaal and Moyes time, where they weren't single-minded enough. And Mourinho's got that record of success as well. And he knows the players who he needs to be on that journey with him. And those players know what he requires in order to be on that journey with him. And those are not up to the task. They're going to be told to go.
Absolutely. And Giancarlo, Mourinho is loved by Inter fans for what he achieved there. Now, can he turn United into the title challengers again, you reckon?
Well, I mean, I think certainly on the Inter experience, you would have to say, yes, he can. His first season with Inter wasn't breathtaking. I mean, they were already a strong side, and it didn't really, you know, a lot of the players he brought in or he had didn't do a job for him. But I mean, what you were saying about getting the mindset right, I think that is the key to his style of management. It's not loved by everyone, and it's not particularly loved by me. I'd have to say that you know, that kind of paranoia that he likes to instill in his team and us against the world kind of mentality. But you know, the second season at Inter was simply breathtaking. They won everything that there was really to win, and he had players that were willing to put themselves on the line for him, really. That was the bottom line. That defence that he put together there was, you know, they were throwing bodies in front of everything. And I think that's the kind of dedication he demands, and it takes time. You're not going to get that overnight, and you're also not going to get it if players sense that the manager might be gone in 2 or 3 months. I don't think you'll get that either. So, you know, the club needs to show that it's committed to him, and then in return, I think the players will, the ones that do buy into his ideas will flourish, and the others will be shown the door. I think that's history's shown that. So, you know, you have to give the man a bit of time to do the job. He did a cracking job with Inter that second season. As I say, it really is about getting into the heads of the players and making them feel part of his project, really. It is very demanding on players as well, and I don't think, you know, I question how sustainable it is kind of long term. I do think he's one of these managers that maybe squeezes the life out of players, really. But, you know, if it brings Manchester United back to the very top of the English and European game, then I suspect there'll not be too many Manchester United fans that would complain about that.
Absolutely. Listen, the football, he's playing very well at the moment. I mean, people said that when Mourinho took over, it's going to be boring. But to be fair, it's been pretty entertaining. I mean, apart from the Liverpool game, which, okay, fair enough. I can understand why he wanted to stifle Liverpool. Yeah. The rest of them haven't been too bad. So I don't really understand what his notion of Mourinho being negative is about. Anyway, look, his old club, Chelsea, go from strength to strength, recording their sixth win on the bounce and sixth clean sheet on the bounce, beating Middlesbrough 1-0. Now, at the beginning of the season, I actually tipped Chelsea to be the eventual winners of the Premier League, and they're not proving me wrong at the moment. Now, Giancarlo, why do you think people are surprised with how well Conte has started? I mean, he's really starting to get the best out of players who were quite unfancied last season, like Matic and especially Moses.
Well, I mean, I think I'm surprised that people are surprised, because he's been, you know, one of Europe's top coaches for a while now. He did a good job at Juve. And if you look in the summer, what he did with Italy, actually, that was a classic example of getting the best out of an unfancied team, because they went into that championships, you know, not rated much at all. And they produced some good results with you know, what was a pretty average squad of Italy players, really. But he is able. He's another in the Mourinho mould that, you know, he kicks every ball from the touchline. He really lives and breathes the game. Again, you know, he'll not be to everybody's taste. Some people don't like their managers quite so intense, but, you know, he seems to be another person who can get inside the heads of players and really get them to produce more than they're apparently capable of. You know, especially these kind of sort of middle tier players that are pretty unsung normally, he seems to be able to get them to raise their game and really play an important part for the team. So it's not really surprised me that, you know, he's done a good job, because I don't think the Chelsea squad suddenly went bad overnight. You know, they've still got one of the strongest squads to my eyes anyway in the Premiership. And, you know, in a way we're seeing a sort of reversal of fortunes as they've risen up the league. Another Italian, Claudio Ranieri's tumbled down the league. So, you know, that's the way of the world. But you might think that's a sort of return of the natural equilibrium, really, because Chelsea underachieved last season and Leicester overachieved. So maybe things are balancing up now. But Conte's a good coach. He knows the game. He knows how to get players in. And again, he's one that gets them to work for a cause. They have to work hard. They have to buy into his ideas. And, you know, you can see, I think he said that, you know, after a couple of key games where he saw things weren't working, he wasn't afraid to make changes. He wasn't afraid to get rid of some stalwarts and bring in faces that hadn't featured much. And since then, you know, they've been almost unbeatable, and it's been impossible to score a goal past them.
Mm, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned stalwarts and everything like that. Cesc Fabregas is one of these players that can't seem to get into the lineup at the moment. I don't know whether he's injured or maybe he's just out of favour, or maybe even his attitude isn't good enough for Antonio Conte, or even perhaps he doesn't, and here's that word, work hard enough.
That's definitely a thing that Conte favours. You look at his team selections, you look at the squad he took to the European Nations as well. It was all about work rate, really. It's not, I mean, if a player can produce flamboyant touches, great, but they have to be pulling their weight. If they're not doing that, I mean, I'm not saying this is necessarily the case for Fabregas, but there's certainly players who could have been in that Italy squad that weren't taken, that were, you know, players that you would think had a more classy touch on the ball, but he likes them to, I think, eat grass is what he said in Italian, which just means work really hard and, you know, give everything in every game. And I think if it comes to a sort of a coin toss of a player with flair against a player of endeavour, then history's shown that Conte will come down on the side of the hard worker.
Now, Mike, our friend Matt Whitehouse, he's a very keen admirer of David Luiz.
Yes.
And he's come back to England a much more assured player. Now, the thing is, to me, it appears that that humbling at the 2014 World Cup, coupled with his time as France, has made him a better player. Has he just grown up?
I think he's always been a good footballer. You know, that we can agree on is he's good on the ball. You know, he's got the physical attributes as well. I mean, I think for many, their opinion of Luiz was shaped by when Gary Neville called him a 10-year-old playing PlayStation. But he is comfortable on the ball. He's always been good in the air, and he's a defender that you know that could take free kicks. I mean, that's a technical thing to be able to do. I think the system he's currently playing in is certainly helping him. Where he's not been when he was a centre half playing in a two, he had to have that responsibility of being a defender, maybe the last defender, and that responsibility maybe didn't sit well with his style of play. Playing in a three as he is now, his primary role is obviously he's a defender, but he's also to bring the ball out, and that's where his strengths are. And you know, if he can do that, and knowing that there's two behind him, that's where it's working. Is he maturing? Well, Mark can tell us as well that centre halves mature far later because they have to have a greater appreciation of the game. It's one of those positions on the pitch where, you know, the older they get, you better you get. You know, you look at John Terry, you know, and Rio Ferdinand in their latter years. They were still excellent footballers because even though they lost their physical attributes, their pace, they were still able to read the game. And I think Luis is just reading the game better. His personality also points to the fact that he needed to mature. He always had this sort of childlike...
Like a laddish kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. When he said, what was that against United where he got fouled in the corner and he started giggling like a...
Because he got Rafael sent off.
There we go. And, you know, if as a person he had to mature, certainly as a footballer he had to. And I think having a manager like Conte has helped him greatly.
Mm, absolutely. And he's not making the silly mistakes that he used to make. You know, keeping his eye on the ball, not marking the man, not tracking runners. He seems to have got that added intelligence into the game as well. Like I said, maybe his time at Paris Saint-Germain maybe helped him...
I just think that he has grown up. I think you're right in that maturity. But I just think the system allows him that little bit more time on the ball. And when he's on the ball, he's a far better player. And he's making more correct decisions than he did last time he was over here.
Fair enough. Now, Harry Kane was the hero. Spurs came back from 2-1 down to win 3-2 against West Ham. Now, Mike, at the risk of suggesting Spurs are a one-man team, isn't it a coincidence they've stepped up the gear since his return from injury?
I mean, I remember last time I was on the show and I said that, yes, Harry Kane is an important part of why Spurs weren't scoring and weren't the same team as they were last year. But, yes, they have stepped it up, but they're still not the team that they were last season. And for me, it's not just the absence of Harry Kane. As I said on the show last time, for me, Toby Alderweireld is very, very important. He is such a dominant presence in that team. He's really important defensively, but also offensively. If you recall last season, the number of times he would pick up the ball and ping a 50-60 yard crossfield pass and get Spurs off on a counter attack, release pressure. But he's also got leadership qualities, and I think Spurs miss Toby Alderweireld as much as Kane. Kane clearly, you know, is very important to Spurs because they don't have another player like him up top. They don't have, you know, Son and Janssen cannot occupy the defenders like Kane can or Kane does, and I don't think they're able to shoot and get balls on target, and they haven't got the finishing ability that Kane has. And yes, he's very important. Are they a one-man team? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think just as important has been the dip in Dele Alli's form.
Absolutely.
I think that hasn't helped Spurs. And but I can't disagree that Kane's return has meant that Spurs are far more of a threat going forward and a goal threat.
Absolutely. And Mark, Slaven Bilic, his job looks safe at the moment, but that's purely because he's got a really good relationship with the fans. Now, how long do you think it will be before they actually start turning on him? I mean, you know how fickle some fans can be. A love affair can only last so long. What do you reckon?
It's a really difficult one, Stal, because, you know, I think us football fans are from a different breed. We obviously all want our team to be successful and to win games. And, you know, sometimes we don't look at the bigger picture. We pay money to go and see our team play. You know, we want to see wins, especially at home. We want some success. We want something to cheer about. You know, they seem to be happy with what he's done and what he's doing at the moment. But, you know, and I know, after a few bad results or a poor performance that they think that they should have won, then you start to get a few people saying different things. And, you know, I've worked with the owners of West Ham before, you know, and I know they make decisions that sometimes is going to upset the fans and sometimes they think he's in the best influence for the club. So I really do think that if he doesn't start pushing and putting some wins together, then by the January period when the transfer window opens, we could be seeing a new boss in there.
Absolutely. We now turn our attention to Serie A and the Derby della Madonnina, where Ivan Perisic potted home a last-minute equaliser. A great start for new coach Stefano Pioli. Now, Giancarlo, before we discuss the game, what do you make of what's happening behind the scenes at Inter? I mean, De Boer's tenure, there was a disaster. What does Pioli have to do to tidy things up?
I mean, I think he doesn't have to do that much, actually. I mean, I get the feeling that Inter have got a strong squad of players there that really can get things back together and move up the league. I don't think it's rocket science putting that team together, really. And Pioli's the kind of safe pair of hands that probably could do it. I don't think it's going to be sort of mouth-watering football all the time, but I think he can iron out the problems that they've had and probably get them playing. You know, even on the first evidence, the game against Milan, they looked good to Inter for long spells, and they were on top for long spells, and it was really Milan caught them on the break a couple of times that it was Inter really that had the longest periods of dominance in the game, and I think that bodes well going forward. Obviously, the changes in ownership and the new Chinese owners, that takes time to bed down. This is a new experience for Italy as well, really, to have foreign owners at big clubs. It's not like England where, you know, every club really pretty much is owned by someone from overseas. We've always had our own presidents in Italy from within their own shores. Now to have foreign owners is something that it will take a bit of time for fans and clubs to adjust to. And I think there's still maybe a bit more behind the scenes turmoil to get through at Inter before they actually get that solid base. But you know, this is a big club with still a good squad of players, and I think Pioli could easily again. It's always a question of being given time, and you know, in Italy, Slaven Bilic would be out the door at West Ham United if he'd had those results in Serie A. Patience is a rare commodity in Italy, really. So you know, you don't get long to do these things, and that's why, you know, I think they bring in these managers to kind of steady the ship and just get a few points on the board, and then they can start to build. But I think that there are the elements there for Inter to produce a strong team again. Whether they'll get the time, whether Pioli will get the time to do it, that's another question entirely.
I was about to ask you if they're going to end up above 11th, but it's kind of a bit of a difficult one, because if you don't keep the same manager, you never know.
Well, that's right. You know, I mean, that the chopping and changing doesn't help. I can't see the season ending with Inter sitting so lowly in the league. One way or another, they'll claw their way up the table. I mean, I don't think they're quite as bad as their results have suggested. Just the same way, I don't think Milan are quite as good as their results have suggested. I mean, that they were up in second place, really. So, some of their performances, they have been better this season by a long way, but they've not been amazing either. You know, and I think that these things tend to even out in the long term. I think you'll see Inter will start to pick up. It's a very tight league in Italy, apart from Juventus running away at the top of it, and it really only takes, you know, two or three wins to get up to second place, or two or three defeats to end in the kind of the bottom half of the table.
That's right. And Mike, Inter started brightly, then forced Milan to make quite a few mistakes. This was a much more positive and aggressive Inter, though. Do you think the derby came at the right time for them?
I mean, Pioli said as much when he took charge, didn't he? That you know, it's come at the right time. They, you know, as Giancarlo said, they more than deserve the draw. Mm-hmm. That's something like over 60% possession, 22 shots on goal. But as you said, they were far more aggressive than they had been in previous matches. And did it come at the right time? Well, given the abysmal form that they had under De Boer, what better way to really galvanise a team, to get people up for get players up for a match than a Milanese derby? And for Pioli, that was the perfect match, wasn't it, really? However, it's how they perform in their next match against, I think they've got Fiorentina, is that right, Giancarlo? They've got Fiorentina next, haven't they?
That is indeed, yes, yeah. That is indeed. I'll be hoping they perform quite badly in that one. But the revival can start the following week.
But if they do beat Fiorentina, they go above Fiorentina. So, as you said earlier, you know, a couple of wins and they, you know, the teams can start moving up. It's quite tight.
Yeah, it's very tight there. As I say, outside the Juventus running away with it at the top of the table, you've a whole bunch of teams there, and you know, any one of them putting together a decent run of form is going to emerge as a contender for a Champions League play.
That's right.
So you're going to give us a prediction, Giancarlo, what do you reckon?
Well, on where Inter will finish?
On the match at the weekend.
Oh, the match at the weekend. Well, it's actually, I think it's a Monday night game. I'm hoping that Fiorentina had a good result at the weekend. It was only Empoli, but they won 4-0. And I think that what suits Fiorentina is a team that comes at them, a team that leaves a bit of space, and they struggle when they play teams at home that close up in Florence, and teams come and shut up shop, and they really struggle to break those sort of teams down. Whereas I think Inter will try to impose themselves on the game, and that could play into Fiorentina's hands. So I guess I might sit on the fence, but I think Fiorentina might edge it 2-1. I think it could be a victory for Fiorentina, and they push them right back up into contention for a top three finish.
Fair enough. Now, Suso, former Liverpool player, he's become a vital component to this Milan side. I mean, Giancarlo, why do you think he's succeeding where the likes of Balotelli and especially El Shaarawy have failed?
Well, I think that I'd give a lot of credit to the manager. I think you see that, you know, what we're saying about Inter and the chopping and changing. Milan's gone through a heck of a lot of managers. I mean, I'd look back just recently to see, and I'd forgotten who some of the Milan managers had been over the last 3 or 4 years. No, in the desperation to find the winning formula, we've gone through Clarence Seedorf, Pippo Inzaghi, Christian Brocchi, Sinisa Mihailovic. You know, they've really chopped and changed without any discernible progress. And now, you know, a man that we know well in Florence, Vincenzo Montella, who was, you know, very successful with Fiorentina, certainly had produced some lovely footballing sides when he was in charge there, has gone to Milan. And the funny thing is, though, I think like all genuinely good managers, he's been able to adapt to the players at his disposal. He's not gone, he came to Fiorentina with a reputation as being a kind of straight 4-3-3 manager, and he adjusted that almost immediately to get the best results at Fiorentina. And I think everybody expected when he went to Milan that he would produce this kind of intricate passing football that they produced at Fiorentina, but actually he doesn't have the personnel to do that. If you look at the Milan midfield, well, as soon as Riccardo Montolivo got crocked, but even with Montolivo in the side, they were going to struggle to produce that kind of football. Instead, I think he's taken on board what players he's got, and he's got a pretty pacey strike force, quite exciting, but a counter-attacking one. I think between Niang, Baka and Suso, they all like, and they're all good at playing on the break. And that was, I mean, the second goal that Milan scored in the derby was an absolute beauty. I mean, but a real sweeping move from the back to front in a matter of moments, and the ball was in the back of the net. So, Balotelli was a flop because he's Balotelli. El Shaarawy had cut a bit more slack. I think that was just maybe playing at a bad time for the club. But there's no doubt that Suso had a stormer in that game. In goals were both beauties, and it was a real cracking advert for Italian football. That, if I thought that there tends to be a bit of a kind of looking down the nose sometimes at Serie A as a poor relative of some of the leagues, but that Milan derby was a real belter of a game, and some cracking goals. Candreva's goal also was a beauty. But you know, Suso's fitted in because I think he's got a manager that knows how to get the best out of him there, and you know, that's, he's thriving in a setup that suits him and suits, you know, all the other players in the Milan side as well.
Absolutely. And when you look at the table right now, there's a team sitting in fifth place at the moment from Bergamo, namely Atalanta. It's been a fantastic start to the season for them, and Gasperini, the new manager, took over in June. Why do you think they're going so well? What's their secret?
Well, I mean, partly, I mean, Gasperini's a wily old manager, and he does set up a team well, and he does get them to play quite attractive football as well. So, you know, that's one part. But I think the other part, which can't be understated, is the youth product that Atalanta bring through. I mean, anybody that knows Italian football will tell you that if you're looking for where the best young Italian players come through, there's no doubt that Atalanta have been doing it for years, and they're still doing it now. So much so that I think Giampiero Ventura this week called up a sort of a B squad of Italian players for a training session. And, you know, I think that young players look into the future, and I think there were no fewer than 7 Atalanta players in that squad. And that shows you the kind of the level that they're bringing players through at. And I think he's been able to really get the best out of them. But they always seem to unearth some new talents, and they generally, the rest of Italy then comes along and buys them off them. But, you know, for the time being, I think fans in Bergamo will be enjoying it. And again, in a very balanced league, it only takes a run of a few results to put yourself right up there. And that's, you know, Atalanta have done that in the back of a good run of games. They cracking performance again at the weekend. Another good game where they came from behind to beat Roma and sabotage Roma's dreams of getting closer to Juventus. And you know, that Atalanta squad is a lot of young players. That Mattia Caldara, one of the boys, scored a goal at the weekend. Very promising player. And Roberto Gagliardini in the midfield had an absolute blinder of a game, and I mean, that's a boy that I think certainly Serie A sides will be looking at, if not in January, then certainly come next summer. You can expect him to be on the move. And he's also got a lot out of his striker Andrea Petagna, who ironically was on Milan's books, but now seems to be thriving with the faith that's been put in him in Bergamo. So, you know, it's a really encouraging success story for anybody that's a fan of Italian football, like I am. Then to see a team put its faith in young Italian players and get rewards for it is always quite gratifying.
Yeah, I think it's come to a point now where the Italian teams actually, you know, really value the Primavera. You know, you see even Milan are utilising it to the best of their abilities now.
Well, that's right. You know, you've seen players. I mean, a bit by necessity. I mean, say the injury to Montolivo really forced Milan to take a chance on Locatelli, and he's really, you know, delivered on that. And obviously Donnarumma in goals, Romagnoli at the back. And these are not all, Romagnoli wasn't a Milan youth product, but Donnarumma is. You know, they are having to. I mean, it's a bit in times when Italian teams were super rich, this would never have happened. I don't think we would have seen them go out and buy whoever they needed. But now that even the big sides are not as wealthy as they once were, they're being kind of forced their hand to look again at what is coming through from the youth sides, or, you know, what good youth bases like Atalanta are producing, and start to build teams around those Italian players. So it can only be good for the national team going forward as well, if these players do come through and do start to deliver for their club sides.
Absolutely. Right, now let's turn our attentions to Trump land, shall we? And on Monday, the US national team and Jurgen Klinsmann parted company, although it wasn't much of a surprise if the Germans' future was determined by recent results, losses against Mexico and recently Costa Rica, basically put his head on the chopping block. Mark, you being out there, what's being said about Klinsmann's departure, and what do you feel about the whole situation?
I think, Stan, from a fan's point of view, you know, from the neutral people that are just supporting their country, it's a good decision. I think, you know, we've seen the success they had in the last World Cup, and really people were thinking they can get through the qualifiers quite comfortably. And these are two massive defeats for them, especially one against Mexico, being so local to where I am in Texas. So, you know, after the Costa Rica game, there was a lot of Facebook posts and things from Americans saying how, you know, there needs to be change, et cetera, which we really expected. But from a coaching point of view, it's a bit of a shock for us, because we're only 6 months into the so-called change that Klinsmann was working on with bringing the European style of soccer over here, and you know, the age pure groups for the young ones and things like that. So we were just getting ourselves on board with the changes, and obviously we just don't know if that will continue or in change in any way when they bring the new manager in.
And see, here's the thing, you mentioned a new manager. I mean, rumour has it that Bruce Arena is in the fold to take the job. Now, if that's true...
He has taken it,
is he actually taking it now?
I think he has.
He took it this morning, yeah.
Well, if that's the case, I mean, is this a step backwards? And will he give the likes of Pulisic a chance? I mean, what's he going to do? What, bring back Claudio Reyna and Landon Donovan as well?
This is the problem. I think, you know, I think it's a step backwards when you look at it. I think bringing somebody back in after so long can be a step back. You look at his success, and he has been the most successful American manager in history. So, you know, people will be hoping that he can come back in and work a magic again. But I see it just as a stepping block to get through the qualifiers and why they actually look for somebody else. They've named him as head coach, but they've not named him as technical director as they have over here with Klinsmann. So we will see. They're going to have to bring somebody in to really look after the whole program. Like I say, the youth system is trying to get better so that they can keep improving and keep bringing players through, because it's difficult over here being the sport that nobody really goes for. I know it's growing, but the problem is now is that they've got to try and get that interest back up and start getting these young players through. You know, my local team, FC Dallas, have got some fantastic players from the youth system up to the first team, and it's never really seen them have any opportunities. So, you know, I'd like to see that happen as well, personally. But we will see. I honestly think, like I say, it'll be a stepping stone. And after the qualifiers are over, whatever happens, if they do qualify or they don't qualify, I think you may see a new face, somebody younger and somebody fresh that wants to go and improve stuff.
Mm. Well, Mark, you mentioned, you know, youth academies and whatnot in America. I mean, we stepped on, you know, the Italians and how, you know, they're bringing through players. Milan, Atalanta bringing through quality players and even half-decent players. I mean, you've got like the likes of Giovinco that's gone to MLS, who came through the Juventus Academy. He's been absolutely fantastic. Now, what is it with America? Because they've got, what, 300 million people? If that? I mean, why can't they bring through a world-class talent? I mean, we heard of Freddie Adu and he didn't do much. You know, you had your Brian McBride, who's the fellows at Spurs for a bit? And Fulham were the number two. Clint Dempsey, you know, Tim Howard.
Yeah.
They haven't really produced one of these world-class talents that, you know, they'll even sell loads of merch. So what's going on out there? I mean, surely soccer is actually getting people's attention. I mean, since USA 94, you'd have thought they'd have brought in at least one or two world-class players in that time. Have people just given up, or is it just like a soccer mum mentality?
No, I think, you know, it's a growing sport, as we say, and I think, you know, more and more now you're getting a lot of the boys that want to get into soccer at school and scholarships and things like that. But the difficult thing is, and I've said this before, Stal, is that American football still trumps it all over here. You know, the main full scholarships for college and high school are getting thousands and thousands of people going to watch Friday night football. So every young athlete growing up wants to be an NFL star and not play in Major League Soccer, because Major League Soccer not being one of the most interesting leagues in the world.
Right.
You know, I think if you were giving them an option to go out and play in the Premier League, it could be a totally different story. You know, if that was their goal to go through the system here and then get a move to England, then you may see a lot more work and a lot harder for it. But at the minute over here, like I say, all the options really lead to you making millions on being in the NFL and playing college football instead of soccer.
Mm. These one thing I've noticed, Mark, doing my research in American soccer teams, that the majority of them are more focused on the commercial aspect of it. I think, to be fair, Chicago Fire, I mean, they've recently appointed the French Academy director from Paris Saint-Germain, Cedric Catenoux. And, you know, he started in October, and you can tell that they're very focused on, you know, bringing players through. They've got about six or seven different states where it's just full of Chicago Fire shirts, and they've really invested in youth. But the thing is, everywhere else, like your likes of LA Galaxies, you know, your Seattles, your New York cities, they're not really investing in youth as much. They're just more focused on the commercial aspect of the game. Do you think that's where they're going wrong? As you said, there's just too much focus on the other US sports.
Yeah, I agree. They're not putting enough money into the youth systems and really getting anybody. I don't think there's really any recruitment staff, or as many recruitment staff, should I say, that come out to our youth games and watch these boys play. Because, you know, I can be out on the field every weekend and I can look at players and really think, well, yeah, they could be, you know, they could be easily in an academy in England. The rules have come in now that at young ages, you're not allowed to head the ball anymore due to the concussions and things. Now, like I say, don't get me wrong, I think concussions is a major thing and players are out with concussions. But honestly, growing up playing soccer for so long, I don't think heading the ball is the main cause, especially with the balls being so light now and the new manufacturers and things like that. So it's a difficult one when you're on the field and you're having to move out of the way because you can't head it because it's going to be a free kick, or you have to duck and, you know, a cross comes in and that defender can't go out and head it out, or the striker can't come and head it in the goal. So it's a bit of a farce in that ruling. I really don't agree with that one, but I can still understand why people think that ruling should have come into place. But we'll see. All these new rules have only been in for 6 months, so we'll just see how they last into next season.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, Mike,
yes,
you know a thing or two about coaching and youth academies and whatnot. I mean, what advice would you give American clubs, MLS clubs?
I mean, I think something Mark touched on earlier, where he said that he goes to see, some players, younger players who may be ready for, who could be, you know, ready for academies in the UK, in England. I mean, I'll just ask Mark, is there much talent ID going on in the States? Is there much,
no, that's the problem. That's the problem, mate. There's nothing that I don't think I've ever in the whole nearly 2 years I've been coaching here, I've ever seen anybody out on the field doing any sort of recruitment for for either the youth of the MLS clubs or the national level. Mm. I think it's just other coaches trying to steal your players to be a part of their team because it brings money into their team when the player joins, and obviously gives these self-employed coaches a job.
Because over here, I mean, the FA are putting on a lot of, CPD, a lot of sessions on for, you know, just normal coaches, grassroots coaches like myself, to go and understand what talent ID is and, you know, and what the FA are trying to do, so we can understand the whole culture at the highest level in terms of what the FA are trying to do. And if that's not happening, you know, in this case in America, then how are these young, possibly incredibly talented footballers who may not have the physique or the size for American football and not being identified for soccer?
Yeah, this is the difficult one. The teams, the MLS teams, have their youth systems, and you know there's a good standard of soccer there, but there's not enough boys in those systems to really make a difference. You know, we look at England, for instance, and every club in England has a youth system from, what, 5-6 years old all the way up to the first team, you know, with the new under-23 league coming out and things like that. So I think that's really what Klinsmann was trying to do. I think his ideas away from coaching the national team, the first team, his ideas and the background about the youth system and how he wanted to run it was fantastic. I think he was trying to bring in that European system. So, you know, maybe fire him as a head coach, but maybe keeping him in as a technical director above that, which deals with what's going on the youth side and further, then that could have been a good idea. But just to get rid of him totally, it now just has to bring in somebody else and new ideas.
Hmm.
Fantastic. Well, gents, that's all we've got time for this evening. Really appreciate you both coming on the show, Giancarlo and Mark, and we hope to have you back on soon.
Thanks, guys.
Great to see you. It's been a pleasure.
Brilliant. Well, guys, before I let you guys go, would you like to give our listeners your Twitter handles?
Oh, yep, I can do that. Yep, I'm just pretty straightforward. Ginkers, Ginkers on Twitter. That's me for all things Italian football and... misery post Fiorentina games.
And you've got a new gig somewhere, haven't you?
Well, I'm still doing the Football Italia stuff. I'm still doing that, and I mean, if you're looking for a stocking filler for Christmas, then 20 great Italian games, 1 and 2, are both still available for Kindle and in print format as well.
Fantastic, Mark. What are you up to?
It's been a very quiet a month or so now. We have the winter break, as we know, so we still try and get the kids out to practice, but you never really get them motivated when it's Thanksgiving and Christmas and no games at the end of the week to play. So we're just keeping the ball rolling, as we say, and looking forward to January, where we can get and play some tournaments and focus back on the start again in February.
Brilliant. And how's your mate Stephen Clements doing at Aston Villa at the moment? You spoken to him since?
I text him. I give him a message just to make sure he knows that I'm not happy about his move. But no, I wish him all the best, and you know, and same with Steve as well. So it's a great job for him, really. You know, I can remember him being at Birmingham coaching the U10s with me. And, you know, he really pushed on, got his licenses, got a good job at Hull. And then Steve's put a lot of trust in him and moved. It's amazing now, though, to look at the Villa backroom staff and see, obviously, Steve and Stephen Clements and Colin Calderwood and Ian Atkins with all their, you know, ex-Birmingham relations to be in there doing that. But, you know, good luck to them on a personal point. Good luck to them, really, as a fan and having blue blood. Obviously, I hope they don't go up this year, but in a personal friendship, I think they do a fantastic job.
Brilliant. Mike?
Yes.
Twitter handle?
At Del Pieri.
Excellent. You can give us a follow on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page, which you're more than welcome to join. And also give at Technovate a follow. They have created the amazing ball launcher, specifically for grassroots up to pro level. Trust me, go on their website, ball-launcher.com, and be amazed by it. It's a fantastic product, and I'm pretty sure you can learn a lot from it. Well, guys, that's it from us. We'll be back soon. Take care.